Welcome to Formidable Fun Food and Wine. This is Tony Foreman.
Okay. Wake up.
Do you want to tell them who you are? We're live.
I'm Cindy Wolf. Actually, I'm Chef Cindy Wolf. Oh, boy, that's a good start. Hopefully no one has tuned in yet, Tony.
Yeah, no, I hope that they're tuned in.
Me too.
We have advance emails, so we know
and
the people
live.
Are tuned in.
It's so exciting.
Yeah, you can ring us and mock us for the way that we introduced this program. 410-662-8780. Well,
is it the first day of spring?
No.
No,
it was a couple
we
days
missed
ago.
It already. Okay.
It was a couple days ago, but from when I was a kid, I recall being cold, like muddy, and disappointed the first day of spring every year.
Why were you muddy? Because
they would tell you, it's coming, it's coming. And then, like, you go out on recess and
like,
it's
wow.
still a mess.
Yeah.
It's still cold. You have your winter coat on, but it is actually coming.
Mm-hmm. It is. Try growing up in northern Indiana when
no,
it's not
you.
Mud. It's 2 feet of snow out there. And you're like, wow, I just want to ride my bike. That is one of the biggest things I remember from being a little. When I had my first three-speed Schwinn bike, it was yellow, by the way, and had double baskets. Oh, my gosh. I just could not. I got
double
it for Christmas.
Baskets?
Yeah, one on each side. What do you call that? One on each side.
One
because
each
I
side
rode it to
what?
School. Of the back of the bike.
Oh, the back of the bike.
Back of the bike, yeah. So, I rode it to school. My elementary school was just down the road from my house, and it was all like county roads, and I lived at near the end of our a housing development. So it was super safe, and my mom loved it. But I got,
the
I
way
got my
did you ride,
Christmas.
It was safe?
Well, I didn't drive like I do now then.
Oh, my gosh. So the topic we are headed towards, slowly and anecdotally, is what we wanted to hear from people on was, what makes you think about spring mm-hmm. in food? What
right.
is the thing that you're dying to make? What are you dying to cook?
Yeah, you're like, we're just all
what
so
you, what
are
you, what,
anticipatory.
What are you marking the calendar with, like, I'm going to eat X?
When it comes out,
you
I
know?
Can't wait.
Exactly.
Yeah, I know. What are you waiting on, Tony?
Hot dogs.
That's not spring.
That's definitely spring.
Hot dogs?
I'm waiting for baseball.
Oh, yeah.
Come on.
Yeah, yeah. Okay.
You had double right. baskets, okay?
You
I had
went
a
to
lot
baseball.
Of baseball equipment.
You had a professional baseball team in your hometown.
Going to the first game?
Yeah, that's funny. That really is
not
a
necessarily
memory.
Opening day, but just the whatever first game is that you get to go to, you get your first hot dog of the year at the ball game.
That's fun. I like that.
You know?
Yeah.
You get some little weird bit of sunburn on your ear or something, even though you weren't warm the whole time. You know, that's,
yeah.
But yeah, it's literally that. I mean, there are plenty of things I'd love to cook this time of the year and that I want to cook.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'm dying to, like, waiting for it to show up. I have my list of, like, farmers to call this week to see exactly what people have going on. And this is, you know, this is always that time, that last week of March, you find out what's cooking.
Well, and also what they could maybe plant for us as well. You know, they often ask us if we have any requests, which is super cool.
We actually had a couple of those guys early this year, and that stuff is already going on.
That's awesome. That's so exciting.
But yeah, the hot dogs.
Okay. Well, you surprised me with that one. But then I didn't grow up where there was a baseball team, so that's
you don't care.
I love that. I love that. That is a childhood memory for you and so many people in town. That's super cool.
So, for you, what are you dying to eat?
Well, really,
it tells you it's spring.
I really have a hard time not thinking as a chef, as a person. I really don't recall.
You had double baskets. Think outside of
yeah,
being
but
a chef.
I can't really recall that. You know, my mom never. You know, I think English peas and spring potatoes or new potatoes. Excuse me. excuse me, and things like that. But that's not really, you know, spring necessarily. So. I think really for us and our family, it was Easter and the idea that we would have lamb for Easter. And, you know, my father grew up, his dad was a butcher. So, you know, those first spring lambs were always a very prized item in this country. So, you know, that was something my dad would say to my mom, you know, Jean, let's get some lamb for Easter. So I think that's the childhood memory. But as a chef, it's definitely soft shells, which we just got in over the weekend for the first time. They're super expensive because it's the first of them, and they are from Georgia.
But yeah, they're
not local.
They're not
but
locals.
Not yet, but they will be soon, hopefully. But, you know, this time of the year, we'll start to get them from Georgia, North Carolina, South Carolina, and then eventually, obviously, we'll get locals, which is so exciting and obviously what we prefer to use when they're here.
Yeah, you'll probably get some locals by Easter, is my guess.
I hope
this
so.
Year.
Yeah.
Easter being a little bit late this year.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Yeah, soft shells make me think of it. Fiddlehead ferns.
Yeah, that's true, right?
I love fiddlehead ferns. They have that extremely intense flavor that's very vegetal, a bit bitter.
They're so beautiful, too. I love the way they look.
And they're, I've always kind of like, I never found the right thing to put them with.
Mm-hmm.
And then I put them with buffalo mozzarella.
Oh, that sounds great.
And just blanch them, chill them.
Okay. So they're cold?
Cold.
Okay.
And with buffalo mozzarella and a fresh mint vinaigrette, just like the first smallest baby mint.
That's nice. That sounds good.
And and 1 year I got green almonds to do it with. And
you
want to
tell the fresh buffalo milk mozzarella story in case people don't know where the milk comes from?
Well, the
milk. That it's actually water buffalo.
Yeah,
and didn't you tell us a story that it came to Italy?
It came to Italy
through a king, or I forget.
In the 1880s, water buffalo were brought from Africa to Campania.
Campania,
which is where you find them producing buffalo milk mozzarella.
Mm-hmm.
But that's kind of a crazy thing. The whole point is
it's so interesting.
The milk is so fatty, it has such, dense nutrition, it makes for more opulent cheese when you make it.
I tell you, that's one of my favorite things in this world, really, really well-executed fresh buffalo milk mozzarella.
Well, and it's also just an incredible foil for intensely flavored whatever it might be. You always think of it in the summertime, come August 1st with tomatoes and that sort of thing.
Definitely.
But
many
almost
other
any strong vegetable, that asparagus, with the tarragon vinaigrette and buffalo milk mozzarella can be great.
Right.
And that's definitely something on my agenda for about, 4 weeks from now.
And sometimes even when we're kind of hankering for tomatoes and feel like, you can roast some, that you have some that are good enough to roast before the season is up, we've done that together, the mozzarella with that. So that's good, too, if you're just like, I really wish I had some tomatoes right now.
Yeah, I need some flavor from them.
Mm-hmm.
So you can reach us today and tell us your spring desires in food, whether it's or a particular memory. You can reach us 410-662-8780 or email us foremanwolf@wypr.org. Let's go to a caller, Frank in Mount Washington.
Hi, Frank.
Good morning. How are you this morning?
Good. It's good to hear from
you. How are you doing?
Good to talk to you. I have an item for each of you. It is springtime. And back in 1990, when I was covering March Madness, we drove down to Lexington, Kentucky, where I found that in many parts of the country, spring is the season for lamb fries. And I wonder know if Chef Cindy had any experience with lamb fries.
Mm-hmm.
And Tony, I'm hearing a lot of buzz about Maryland winemaking coming of age. And I've heard that in Mount Airy, on the Eastern Shore, in St. Michael's, down in Leonardtown, there are some pretty respectable wines being made because Maryland winemaking, or actually vineyards, found out that they couldn't learn how to grow grapes from California because the climate and the soils are all wrong, but they could go to the old world and do it the way it was originally done. And now some of those wines are turning out quite fine. So if I could hear from each of you, lamb fries and Maryland wine.
Thanks, Frank.
Maryland wines in general. Thanks, Frank. Maryland wines in general have gotten better and better over the years.
Okay.
Don't discount the things that were produced a long time ago that were really high quality. Some things, there was a producer, Bird Vineyard. The 83 vintage from those guys was definitely a legend.
That's cool.
There are a few others as well from that year, but that was a Western Maryland Cabernet Sauvignon vineyard. And really, really high quality stuff. And built, unlike California, built much more like an old world wine. I mean, that's the reality, is that climactically, we don't act like California because we don't have that same coastal influence, and we don't the people moving to California are going for very different weather than we have. We have four very strong seasons.
Definitely.
Much more like other wine growing regions. And matching up grapes to terroir is a big deal. There is an awful lot more playing around with it than there used to be. You know, that's there is an Albarino and Viognier, which is not a combination that you find on a typical basis in the old world put together, one from Spain, one from the south of France, as a blend coming from one producer in the state of Maryland that is super interesting and very unique and high quality. So that, but there are lots of efforts. I'm not going to single out one or two producers. There are lots of efforts and a lot of capital that's gone into doing the work. But it's a multi-generational learning curve. It's one of the important things about wine. So, Cindy, you want to talk about lamb fries?
Well,
I know. When Frank's question came in, I was just thinking, that's way up Cindy's. Way up Cindy's alley.
Oh boy. So I don't know. Wasn't
Frank.
Really...
Are you still on the line?
No.
No, Frank is gone.
So I really didn't know what they were, and now I know why I don't know what they are. Because you're gonna have to say it. I can't even say it, Tony. I can't say that out loud. Uh huh.
Protein's important. They're lamb testicles.
Oh. Okay. And they're apparently historically...
You usually parboil them, cut them in half, season them.
Okay. And so, yeah, Yeah, Frank, I'm unfamiliar with that. I've never actually even heard of that. So that was a new one for me.
We use every part of the animal, Cindy.
Yes. Well...
Let's go to Al in Baltimore. Al, go ahead.
Hey, my friend. I say you like soft crabs. I love them.
Oh, yeah.
I've been a soft crab lover since I was 10 years old.
That's wonderful.
And they're delicious. But the one thing I think of when spring comes around is, you won't believe this, rhubarb.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, good one.
Though it always comes a little
love
bit later
rhubarb.
Than you think it's going to.
Mm. Yeah, we wish it would come sooner for sure. But that is, I love rhubarb. What do you like to do with it, Al?
Have it for dessert. When they fix it up, I haven't had it in a long time. When I was a student at Maryland School of the Blind back in 1960, something every other Friday, because Friday was a fish day, because of, every other Friday they had rhubarb for dessert.
So
and it was and is delicious, and I haven't had it, but I'd love to.
Do you have any idea if they were growing it on property? Would they have ever told you that?
No, I think it was bought.
Okay.
I think it was bought from been brought outside, and then I don't think it was grown, but you never can tell.
Mm-hmm.
But as far as I know, I think it was brought from outside sources.
Sure. Yeah, my grandmother had rhubarb growing in her backyard. Once you started talking about it, it made me think of it. And she used to make, my mom would make the same thing, just slow-cooked rhubarb with a little bit of sugar and lemon. And, it was super simple, but I always, my grandmother and my grandpa were very big lovers of ice cream. My grandpa used to hand crank ice cream for my grandmother. I think that was a real labor of love. And she'd always serve it with vanilla ice cream. Super delicious.
I love this stuff, and I haven't had it in years.
Oh, well, when you come to me, I'll get you some.
Spring's coming. Rhubarb is on the way.
There you go.
All right.
And strawberries are really good with rhubarb, too, Al, by the way.
Okay. Mm-hmm. I never had that before.
Oh, so good together.
That's kind of a natural.
Yeah, they're a good marriage of flavors.
That's part of that old adage, what grows together goes together.
Ooh, okay.
All right.
Thanks, Al.
Yeah, good to talk to you, Al. Thank you. Happy Sunday.
So you can reach us 410-662-8780 or email us foremanwolf@wipr.org. What's the food that makes you think of spring?
I'm so glad Al brought up rhubarb. You know, it's funny for me to, think about the influences from growing up. You know, just saying that about my grandma and knowing that I had that when I was really little, and now I serve, something like that with foie gras. I mean,
well, I was going to ask you a question about rhubarb and foie gras when we come back.
All right.
In just a few moments, more on Formula Wolf on Food and Wine on WIPR.
Thank you.
Welcome back to Foreman and Wolf on Food and Wine. I'm Tony Foreman.
And Chef Cindy Wolf.
Congratulations on announcing yourself. If anyone was listening to the beginning of the program.
We had a busy night last night.
Oh, my gosh. No one wants to hear about your personal life.
Oh.
So we are live, unsurprisingly. Give us a call, 410-662-8780. Or send us an email, foremanwolf@wipr.org. And we were doing a program last week about Irish, all things Irish food.
Yes.
And we had a number of leftover messages and stories. And just to read a quick listener email from Ken. October 1979, Moran's Oyster Cottage near Galway. Still in business, have their own oyster bed. Wife and I for lunch had oysters on the half shell, warm soda bread, and best butter imaginable,
gosh,
along with Guinness. We talked to a fellow diner at the bar who said he was a Brit retiree to Galway. He came to Moran's every day for the same lunch, smoked salmon, soda bread, single malt scotch.
Awesome. Oh, what a treat.
Some people retire better than others.
Yeah, right? I'm going to retire that way.
October 2018, Dublin, taking 2 days break on our way to Madagascar. Lunch at Kennedy's Bar and Restaurant near Trinity College, there since 1850.
Wow.
Had to eat there since my name is Kennedy, and I have a pen and ink drawing of their facade on the wall over my desk.
Oh, that's
I had
awesome.
Beef and Guinness pie, the classic Irish meat pie with great beef and gravy infused with Guinness, root vegetables, potato mash, and a light crust top. Carolyn had a terrific burger with wonderful chunky fries. Thanks, Ken. Thanks for listening.
That's wonderful. That's a good story. That's a good trip.
So, yeah, we're chasing your spring memories, your spring flavors, the things that trigger for you that it's all about to get a lot nicer.
Yeah, I think allergy season is here, Tony.
I think so.
As a side.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Mm-hmm. Not going
to
do it.
So we should probably talk to Sheila.
Yeah, let's talk to Sheila. Sheila, go ahead.
Okay, I'm in my car, and I hope the sound is okay.
It is.
It's just fine,
good.
Sheila.
Good. I stopped so that I could talk. And
that's nice.
The Southern Maryland stuffed ham, and I know Cindy Wolf knows what that's all about because I brought her one time.
And it was really, really good. That thank you for that, Sheila.
Yeah. So I have a great love of Southern Maryland stuffed ham, but particularly around Easter time.
Mm-hmm.
So I hope you put some on your menu.
Okay, well, I have to think about that. It's quite the dish. I like the idea. And now, did you put kale in yours? Am I remembering that correctly?
I put kale and cabbage.
And cabbage, okay.
And some mustard greens in mine.
I love that.
But you can put whatever you want because there are lots of different recipes out there on the internet.
Mm-hmm.
But it's very important that you put something a little hot.
Okay.
Because it can't be just the kale and cabbage. You need some hot pepper or either flakes or ground. And you know, I always put a little bit of mustard seed and other spices in there with it.
That's great. It's quite delicious.
So yeah, it was delicious, and it is delicious. And I know your staff likes it.
Definitely, absolutely. Well, thank you, Sheila.
Thank you, Sheila.
Enjoy
Thank
spring.
You. Bye-bye.
Enjoy
Have
your Sunday.
Day.
Thank you. You too.
Oh, that's awesome to hear from her.
Mm-hmm.
The trick is if you can find a butcher do you have the skill and a large enough knife to actually cut the spiral ham?
Right.
Because mm-hmm. that's the way those guys are stuffed.
Sure. Yeah, no, it's process.
So let's go to Halsey. Halsey, go ahead.
Hey, guys. Good to hear you today. You know, it's a good day to go foraging. You might say ramps.
Yes.
Ramps and mushrooms. Well, the mushrooms will be coming up.
That's exciting.
Yeah, that's definitely something to look for.
Mm-hmm. So are you a forager, Halsey?
I wish. I'm trying to learn it. My son's learning it. And, I'd recommend to everybody, if you're not a forager, find them at the market.
Right.
There's some good stuff there.
Yeah, definitely. We have.
Yeah, you got to know what you're doing.
You sure do.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
But don't forget, it's also grilling season.
Yeah. Exactly.
Cindy, so, I've reminded you a couple times. I make grills here, so I'm happy to make you one.
All right. Thank you so much.
Yeah. You
thank
bet.
You. Thank
That's
you.
That's awesome. Hmm. Enjoy right. the ramps.
Hope you find what you want.
You bet.
Thank you.
Let's go to Julie in Easton.
Okay. Hi, Julie.
Oh, hi. How are you?
Good.
Good. How are you?
Good. Thanks. I never tasted it, but my father had it every spring. And I've heard you've talked about it before on the show. He would go to a restaurant called Marconi's.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
And have it on Toast Point.
So you were breaking up. What was it that you're talking about? Shad Row?
Oh, I'm sorry. Shad Row.
Okay.
In the spring. And he would eat it on Toast Point at the restaurant Marconi's, which I think was on Saratoga.
Very good. Yeah, I've not heard of it being served on Toast Point. Sounds good.
Right, and I know there is also a festival they used to have. I assume they still have it in the spring in Vienna, Maryland, on the Nanticoke River.
Okay, great. Thanks, Julie.
You're
Thanks,
welcome.
Julie.
Thank you.
Have a good Sunday.
Yeah, shad roe is always
Thank
a big
you.
Thing
Thank
for my grandmother and great grandmother this time of the year.
Mm-hmm.
They're starting to look for. We have an email from Amanda. Amanda. With a message about Persian Nowruz, Persian New Year.
Of course.
A traditional New Year meal, fish stuffed with walnuts, herbs, and pomegranate. Huh. She uses rockfish.
Very good. That's a good hint.
Do you know, is it seasoned locally now?
For rockfish?
We'll check with our...
I don't think it is quite
yet. With our fishing resource.
But I got some amazing rockfish on Saturday delivered to me, and it was huge. Made me wonder... if it actually was very local. So I'm not sure about the season when it opens up. We'll find out. Nowruz is one of the Persian... It's an amazing Persian holiday because, especially for me, being a chef, the first time my brother-in-law is from Iran, and the first time, one of the first times I was ever at their house, you know, probably in like 1985 or 86, something like that, that his mother was still alive, and she prepared all the food. And I think there were 8 of us, and there was enough food on the table for maybe, I'm not exaggerating, 25, 30 people. I've never seen so much food at one time, and it was just beautiful and amazing, and everything was so flavorful. And so, you know, I was a kid, things I'd never eaten. I mean, like many things I'd never eaten before, and barberries and things with saffron and, you know, just pomegranate, as she was talking about. I mean, oh, what an experience. I mean, that, you know, for somebody, you know, having lived in North Carolina and Indiana and, you know, just having nothing like that back then to experience was really, really fascinating, and this is a big time of the year for New Year for them. So I wish you all a happy New Year.
So we've got an email here from Lisa. My favorite spring ingredient is found all over the region for free. And when you pull it up, whether it's in its first or second year, it transitions between two distinct changes. You're actually helping forests. Garlic mustard is just beginning to emerge right now. It's
Ooh.
An invasive that damages forests, and except for humans, no other creature might eat it. It's mildly bitter, garlicky, and is filled with nutrients, especially when you pick, wash, and eat it within minutes.
Hmm.
It's wild, naturally organic, and is best eaten when very lightly cooked. I add it to omelets with an ice-aged cheddar and fried potatoes. It also makes fabulously tasty smoothies. I often combine it with bananas, oranges, ginger, berries, yogurt, and ginger. Garlic mustard makes a killer pesto, and so much more. And every bunch that you pull up from the roots will ensure that plant won't keep spreading through the forest and fields and damage them.
Oh, that's okay. Let's go do that. I'd like to see a picture of that plant.
Yeah.
We'll have to check that out.
That's very cool.
Yeah, that is super cool.
That's Amazing. Very cool.
Mm-hmm. Very good. So rockfish season opens up in April. All right. Oh, I can't wait.
Day before Easter.
Yep. That's awesome. April 20th. Okay. Yeah, one of my cooks was talking about going out and crabbing, I think, this weekend. So that must be open for individuals around this time. So that's, have you ever been crabbing, Tony?
I have.
Yeah, did you do it with a string and chicken? Did you do it that way? Or
I
did
mean,
you do it with nets?
I was a little boy, and I was slightly horrified that we were like dangling chicken necks and
right.
wire traps, you know.
Okay.
But that,
All right.
People are into all kinds of different stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I would prefer the eating part of the crab.
Yeah. That's...
So we have an email here from Barbara, who is looking for advice on buying asparagus and favorite ways to prepare it. I think, Barbara, it's probably pretty darn likely that we're going to get into asparagus when asparagus comes locally, which will be in a couple of weeks. So please keep listening and look for a program that's rich in asparagus detail, because that definitely is its own thing. I think that is probably the one ingredient that you know you can get in an awful lot of Maryland, especially the spectacular produce of the Eastern Shore, the northern part of the Eastern Shore, that is pretty inimitable.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll talk about that in depth.
Definitely the Eastern Shore asparagus is some of the best I've ever eaten in my life, and it's just beautifully consistent as well. You know, it tends to, you know, hopefully the weather is right for them and everything goes well so we can have it for, you know, a good amount of time too.
Yeah, I'm hopeful about the spring. Last year was exceptionally difficult for
we had so much rain.
A lot of farmers. And
it was horrible. Yeah, that was devastating for
people. Driving over there and seeing some of the fields in lower places where the water was coming up, and you know that's salt water, and you know that's going to kill productivity from that piece of ground for a couple of generations.
Yeah, that's pretty tough. That's not good. Well.
So here we have an email from Gretchen. In the mid-1990s, I regularly drove to an Eli Lilly plant in Lafayette, Indiana for work. The first spring I was visiting, morel season arrived, along with many of the mushrooms. Locals call them sponge mushrooms. It took me a while to figure out they were talking about morels. Operators, the folks who operate the processes day and night, told me how to hunt for them. I went home and found one. We sautéed it in butter and were nonplussed. I was later told that some morels are more flavorful than others, or perhaps there are imposter mushrooms, but none are poisonous. The next week at the plant, I told proudly of my find. One of my more snarky colleagues up there told of how he was mowing them into his lawn.
Oh.
I didn't believe him at first.
What?
Yeah.
What?
But I had a chance to shop at a local market that week. It was fascinating to watch locals walking in with loads of many different types of mushrooms. I distinctly remember some bright orange mushrooms, perhaps chicken of the woods or chanterelles.
Wow. Oh, my goodness.
That's Indiana. Craziness.
Oh, my gosh. I can't believe he was mowing them into his yard. That's a crime. He should.
In my top five general ingredients
to
cook and eat,
Yeah. Mushrooms
are definitely in that group.
Oh, yeah. And morels are, morels and porcinis. I mean, we were talking about spring. You know, porcinis are coming out, too, soon. And, oh, my goodness, those are the two wild mushrooms that are just absolutely incredible. And
when you can get morels and asparagus at the same time, you can do magical things.
Mm-hmm. Well, she was asking about recipes for asparagus, too. And I think one of the great things about asparagus is that you can make soup with it and salads. And, I mean, you can just do so many. We don't have to get into it now. But, there's just so many things you can do with asparagus.
And you can use every bit of it if you...
Almost every bit of it. I wouldn't use the really woody end, but...
If you want to. So you can reach us 410-662-8780. Or email us, as some folks have been doing, foremanwolf@wipr.org. We're looking for spring food memories, spring food desires. What are the things you want to cook? What are the things that you're looking for in markets? And that's what we're chasing. I also had an email from a couple of listeners. It's kind of built up over time, asking for a little bit of a primer on South American wines.
Mm-hmm.
And you and I had a little discussion about that as well.
Right. I think one of the things about South American wines is, you know, understanding the grape varietals and sort of what the regions really are. And can you talk a little bit about, you know, who's one of the biggest producers, some of the other producers?
Well, I think at this point, knowledge of Malbec coming from Argentina is pretty ubiquitous. I think people are aware of that. There are so many different quality levels. There's so many different intentional quality levels and price levels that it's a little bit of a Wild West. That's just South American wine in general is a little bit of that. It is difficult, and the labels are multitudinous and they tend to come and go. And that's what happens when you have something that's just, you know, a market that's really kind of blown up. Argentina is the fifth largest producer of wine in the world.
Wow.
Chile is the seventh largest producer of wine in the world, which is kind of wild.
Yeah, I would not have known that.
And both started, you know, once Spain was in South America in the mid-1500s is when both started growing more and more. Missionaries came. Missionaries also brought the cultural technology. Mm-hmm. And they needed ceremonial wine, if nothing else.
Sure.
And I'm sure that they needed something else, frankly.
Yes.
But that was all Spanish tradition for a long time. It's when you think of Argentina, half the immigration is Italian. So you think, oh, it's the Italians that brought the wine. No, it had been there for a long time. Hmm. The Italians brought certain things and sometimes oddball varietals. I mean, the big varietals, and I guess to keep it a little bit simple, big varietals to know in Argentina, Malbec is the biggest red varietal for sure. The most widely grown red varietal is referred to as Bonarda on labels. It's actually the same grape we know as Charbonneau in California. It's a red grape. It's the Douce Noir from the Savoie, which is a super obscure grape. Some of the Piemontese immigrants call that grape Bonarda and brought that grape with them to South America in the 1800s. But that's... Those are the two, and you find a lot of the sort of the usual suspects, Cabernet Sauvignon, Merlot, Cabernet Franc, Syrah, even Tanat, a lot of the southwestern French grapes, and you still find Tempranillo from Spain, and a few other things mixed in. You'll find Pinot Noir from further south, from Mendoza, which is the big wine-growing region, the most important wine-growing region. Further south in Patagonia, not all the way down in Patagonia, but really relatively nearby, where it's still dry and high altitude. And Argentina's big claim to fame, or claim to qualitative fame, is about altitude. The highest vineyards are 10,000 feet.
That's amazing.
Above sea level in Salta, which is super crazy.
Yeah.
I mean, that's when you think about it, that's...
amazing.
I mean, Deer Park in Utah is 8,800 feet. So
that's amazing. I mean,
that's
growing.
Vineyards up higher than that.
That's amazing. Wow. Mm.
And the advantage of all that altitude is, frankly, you're just closer to the sun. You're going to get a totally different, unique, and very pure reaction to ripening from sunlight at that altitude. And very little of the vegetation is up there. So there's very little competition. The soils are very poor. You tend to have rootstocks that go very, very deep. So it's a pretty interesting and unique situation. The average vineyard in Argentina, I think, is at 2,500 feet. So that's still pretty nuts.
Yeah.
A lot of the better producers are in one region of the Mendoza called the Uco Valley. And a lot of that runs from 4,500 to 6,000 feet.
So with the snow and everything, that's, you know, the weather doesn't affect... That's just interesting to me at 10,000 feet that you would think the vines might die up there and wouldn't have longevity.
It's a big, warm, dry desert, essentially.
Okay.
And where your exposure to the sun is the whole ballgame.
When you and I were in Argentina, we traveled through and that region and went up into the Andes. And I will never forget all the different colors of the earth there. I mean, there was a part where the mountain looked like a lion. And do you remember that? And it was just like, what is that in the ground or the earth? That's, you know, I mean, the colors were just, I mean, just, that's got to be interesting that they're doing vineyard sites in this land that's just so different from one spot to the next. And
yeah, absolutely.
What a struggle that must be. Well, that's fascinating.
Those grapes are entirely different than the way that you find them in Europe or in California because of the total unique place. Chile, the most important things to know, you have a bunch of high altitude valleys as well.
Mm-hmm.
The Maipo is the one that made its reputation in the 60s and 70s for world-class Cabernet Sauvignon. I had probably 5-6 years ago a bottle of 1970 Concaturo Cabernet Sauvignon that was in magnificent shape, that was drinking beautifully.
Okay. That's, mm-hmm.
You know, so the almost 50-year.
That's amazing. So that's longevity. You know, that's Chile. Great.
And that's with very, very basic technology and making wine. The grapes that are important there, the biggest two are Cabernet Sauvignon and Carmenere. And Carmenere is an oddball grape, a little bit like a minor grape in the southwest of France again. It was sort of like the fifth beetle of Bordeaux. It was the sixth red grape of Bordeaux. And when the root louse came in the 1800s, didn't get replanted. It took longer to be more fruitful. So
they didn't replant it. Interesting.
But that's, and there's, of course, there's plenty of information to find online. Qualitatively, I would rank the best Malbecs and best Carmenere and better Cabernet Sauvignon, especially the Cabernet Sauvignon from Chile, among the very top, you know, eight quality regions in the world. No question.
Who are some of your favorite producers?
A lot.
I know, I mean, it's that's hard to answer.
A lot. One pet producer of Carmenere is Casa Silva. Mm-hmm. Watch for them in Chile.
Okay.
But that there are so many.
Okay.
And we should head to a break, and we'll get to calls after break. Here on Foreman & Wolf on Food & Wine on WYPR. You can still reach us, 410-662-8780. If you want to sneak in a South American wine question, it can help with that. We're talking almost exclusively about spring memories, spring food. What are the dishes? What is the product in the market that brings about spring for you? Welcome back to Foreman & Wolf on Food & Wine. I'm Tony Foreman.
And Chef Cindy Wolf.
And I was just reminded that it is harvest time now in South America. So we're getting ready for spring here.
And they're harvesting in the fall.
Yeah.
Wow. That's amazing.
And getting ready to have the cooler time of the year.
Have you ever been there during harvest? That would be exciting.
I've not been to South America during harvest time.
You should do that sometime.
That's you're trying to tell me to leave immediately.
No. Okay, yes, no. Not at all.
Couple of quick emails. I occasionally get fiddleheads from my brother in Maine. Are they available locally, perhaps from Western Maryland? Dave in Mount Washington. Dave, they're available locally, absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
And you just have to really kind of pay attention to the farmers markets over the next couple of weeks. And they, frankly, you can find them. There are... just northern Baltimore County, you can find them.
Mm-hmm.
And then we have from Elon, ramps are great, but my favorite spring allium are the giant green onions.
Ooh.
I love them covered in olive oil and charred on the grill, served next to a skirt steak or London broil with compound butter with parsley, anchovy, and lemon.
That's South American, kind of, with the big, don't they, what are they, I love those with the grilled meats, the big green onions.
Cachots?
Yeah. Thank you, Tony. Very good.
You find in Catalonia. Classic Provençal, so good with Chateauneuf du Pape, but I like it with Brunello. Mm-hmm. So, P.S., my wife won't kiss me after eating green onions, but it's worth it. That is just not stuff to send me to read.
Oh.
That is not stuff. Oh, by the way, one last South American thing.
Yes.
A white grape to watch for this spring and summer. You're looking for a white that's charming, big personality. There's a grape, Torrontes.
Mm-hmm.
Not terribly expensive from Argentina. A lot of the best ones are from Salta. That exotic, fresh, lively, good body from the Malvasia family. So another Italian-driven immigrant.
Very good.
Let's go to George. George?
Hi, George.
You're on the air.
Good morning. You guys reminded me of my favorite spring dishes. I went to school. I had the opportunity to go to Morgantown, West Virginia to go to college back in the 70s. And
awesome.
I was introduced to ramps back there before ramps were popular. And they had ram festivals every spring, and they'd do their rams with potatoes and eggs as a breakfast.
Oh,
and so
nice.
I fell in
Good.
Love with rams, and I came to Baltimore, and you couldn't get rams, and I found a grocery store that would send them to me 10 pounds at a time.
Ooh, that's a lot of rams.
until they became very popular here. So now my new thing that my family gets plenty of in the spring is I call it the Holy Triad, and it is asparagus, rams, and morels.
Perfect.
And I put them in butter and in olive oil as a side dish, and I put them in frittatas, and I make pasta sauces with them until mm-hmm. they say enough is enough. But I just love that spring dish. Yeah,
sounds awesome.
Those three together.
Good for you. And that's a beautiful combination of things. I mean, we were talking about morels and asparagus earlier, and they're just perfect for each other. And then to add that sort of garlicky tone from the ramp into that mixture, and I love the idea of it with eggs and potatoes. And also, I love the idea of a ramp festival. How fun was that?
Oh, it was great. Yeah, I miss those. They still have them over there.
That's
so.
Great. Very cool.
So, and all right. Well,
you're ahead of
you
your time, George.
Get me excited again about that.
Good.
You may see us using that as a trio on a pasta dish.
Yeah,
that,
right. That's a good idea, George. Thanks.
Thank you, George. Let's go to Grace in Salisbury. Grace, go ahead.
Hi, Grace.
Hi. How are you both?
Good. How are you today? It's beautiful out, isn't it?
It is. I'm delightful. I was going to share with you my spring dish that I had as a little girl at my house.
Good.
Well, it was called wilted salad, and it was with the freshest, newest lettuce mm-hmm. that grew first mm-hmm. with spring onions. Mm-hmm. And my mother would cook on the stove a little bit of sugar and vinegar and pour it over, and it was just delicious, and
wow.
It takes me back. When I just think about it.
Oh, my gosh, I bet. That sounds so good, Grace.
Yes, loved it.
And it was probably just white vinegar, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
And just a little bit, and it was, we never could get enough of it. We had a little garden in our backyard right down in Princess Anne, Maryland.
That's wonderful.
And we harvested it, and it was gone by dinner time.
There you go.
Is this something you still make?
I would if I could find that lettuce, but it's hard to come by. I go to the farmer's market in Salisbury, and I can find it sometimes.
Okay. Very good.
Well, thanks, Grace.
Thank you for sharing.
Yeah.
Have a good
Have
Sunday.
Have a great day.
Too. Hmm. My dad would love all these things because he loved spring onions so much. I mean, I can still...
Yeah, he was an onion guy.
Oh, he loved onions. He would, I think I've said it before, he would cut, if he could get a sweet onion, he would cut a huge slab of onion and put it on white bread with butter.
Didn't he eat onion sandwiches? Yeah.
Yeah, onion raw. And I, as a kid, I hated onions. You couldn't make me eat an onion. And I just, oh my gosh.
That'll get you a lot of kisses.
Yeah. And then he loved green onions. He just, I can see him at market in York now. And, picking up the spring onions. Yeah. Never saw ramps, though, when I was a kid.
Yeah, no, that's funny. You're making me think of the calzots. That I love that stuff.
You know, with porcinis and morels, you have such a different flavor profile. So these are the two exciting things for me coming up. You know, I've already asked my purveyors if they can find these mushrooms, and hopefully this coming week we'll have them. And we just started serving soft shells, as I was saying earlier.
Morels mm-hmm. have that perfume that's on the road to a truffle, you know,
sure.
there's something that's like more flowery version of something like that.
Well, and also one of the things I just, as a piece of advice with working with these wild mushrooms, I mean, they're not cultivated, so they're growing in the forest floor, wherever they're coming up, and there's bugs and, you know, little twigs and all kinds of things, pine needles. I find so many pine needles
sand.
In them. And sand. They're dirty. And it the biggest problem with working with them, or the not problem, but you know, what you have to overcome is getting them clean so that they're not dirty. And you almost have to, you know, if you've just cut them, hopefully you've cut them cleanly so there's no dirt on the end. But if someone else did it and there's some dirt on the end of the stem, you obviously have to cut that off because you'll never get every bit of that dirt out, but you can certainly clean some of it. But really, I felt so relieved the first time I went to Paul Bocuse's restaurant in Lyon, in France, because I was allowed to go back into his kitchen. And I walked back there, and there was a huge sink full of morels. And one of the things we've always been taught in the kitchen is to be very, very careful about how much water you allow a mushroom to absorb, because all mushrooms are like sponges. I mean, they just absorb tons of water. And water tastes like nothing, so you don't really want them to absorb water. And it also changes the texture of the mushroom. Most often, I found that people really like mushrooms when they've had most of their water content removed in the cooking process and then beginning to caramelize in the pan. And I have to say, that's got to be in butter. Now, it could be in oil, but really, to me, the best, if you eat butter, the best way to do it is just light salt and butter. And with some of the mushrooms, I might perfume that butter near the end. Maybe add a little bit of butter with rosemary, just a tiny bit, just to, you know, sort of scent it, or fresh thyme. But those sorts of things are really pretty. But really, mushrooms are so good on their own. But really, it's the process of cleaning them. So once you have, let these morels sit in the sink of water. I pull them out, pop them into a colander, let them drain really, really well, clean out the sink, get all the dirt out of the sink. And of course, we have huge sinks, so we have an advantage that you wouldn't at home. Hopefully you have a huge sink at home. Put cold water back in, fill up the sink, put the mushrooms back in, let them sit and soak, kind of gently run them through the water with your hands because there are all these little pockets in morels. Morels are like the hardest thing to clean.
Yeah, you kind of have to shake them in your hand a little bit just to get all the little bits out.
Yeah, it's a labor of love, and it's well worth it. And once you've drained them again, I usually pop them in the oven for a couple of minutes, let's say 350 degrees, just to kind of get some of that moisture out. And then
just dry them out a little bit before you
saute. Yeah, and then I either toss them in butter and roast them, continue where I saute them in butter.
Let's go to a call here. Fila, you're on the line.
Hi, Fila.
Yes, hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I've got probably a rather unusual question. My father used to talk about the wonderful ethereal flavor of May apples, which grow native in this area. They're foraging food, typically. But I have found them at Herring Run Nursery and would love to grow them and harvest them and, you know, do something with them. And I'm wondering, have you ever cooked with May apples?
I tell you what, I've eaten them a bunch of times. I ate them 7 meals in a row. So I was traveling in the southwest of France.
I didn't expect you to say
that. visiting producers in Cahors and Madiran and in Armagnac years ago. And it was this time of the year, and that everyone seemed to serve the same menu, everyone that I visited. There were slabs of foie gras. There was an entire duck magre, which is about a pound, basically, a duck breast steak off the grill.
Awesome.
Duck fat roasted potatoes, again, a huge pound of these things, probably per person at the table. And then they made May apple tarts, or it's a form of a crab apple, and something bitter, but it's that's probably the best way to use them that I've seen. It was a very, very buttery tart, so
very good.
Lovely.
But yeah, I had to have them 7 times in a row, so I'm done.
Thank you, Fila, for the call.
Yeah.
And thanks, everybody,
thank you.
for your calls and your emails. I'm sorry we couldn't get to everyone that came through. If you want to listen to this program or any one of our others, please go to the WIPR website, WIPR.org. Look up the Foreman Wolf page, and there's a full menu of goodies there. If you want to send us emails, it's foremanwolf@wipr.org for feedback, information, more questions. We'll try to respond to in future programs or offline. And if you want to follow Chef Cindy Wolf on social media,
you can follow me on Twitter as Chef Cindy Wolf and on Instagram as Chef Wolf.
I am the real Tony Foreman on Instagram.
It always makes me laugh.
It's kind of meant to be
versus
funny.
Versus any fake ones out there.
Thanks so much for listening.
Happy Sunday.